case that you're involved with or you have some association with, maybe it's a case you want to bring. Give us a call. We'll be happy to talk to you about it. We can walk through it and see if we can provide any insight. Even if you just want to talk generally about the law, we're here to do that. A little bit about us. Gervin and Ferlazzo is a full-service law firm that's been serving the Capital District for over 25 years. The firm has quite a number of different areas which we practice in. We have a very large education and municipal practice. We represent around 75 different school districts and 20 municipalities throughout the state of New York. We have a big real estate practice. We have a sizable commercial litigation practice. We have a general litigation practice, which is what I work in, Matt works in. Sal Ferlazzo, our fearless leader, who's off today, hopefully golfing this morning.
Golfing or going to camp, I think he mentioned to me.
Nice.
Going for a nice weekend at his camp.
Well, good for him. He deserves it. And, you know, our practice as well includes collections, labor and employment. We do a lot of labor and employment law, be that for our municipal clients, but also for private sector clients. And we also have a collections department, which Matt's been doing a little bit of work in lately.
I have.
It's an interesting new area for
you.
Yeah,
I've never
explore.
Worked in collections until about, 2 or 3 months ago. And, there's a lot more to it than I thought, on face value, but it's interesting. It's an interesting area of the law.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, there are folks out there who might have questions about that. But I think this morning what we really want to focus on is personal injury.
Yeah.
And summertime is the time where a lot of people are out. They're, you know, driving, engaging in leisurely activities. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of accidents which occur, you know, whether it's a simple slip and fall, maybe a pothole in a parking lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're engaging in a sport, softball game or something like that, and you may be injured. You might have questions about that. Car accidents certainly pick up this time of year, especially with the number of cars on the road, and then also the alcohol can be a big factor.
Always a factor in the summertime.
Always
warm
a
days on beautiful North Pearl Street, having a few cocktails driving home.
So we will we'll get right into that. If you want to call in, if you've got a question that you want to ask us about, we're happy to talk about it. 476-1300. So I think, you know, one of the big things, probably, you know, the most likely, if you're going to be involved in a personal injury suit for the average person, it's something small. It's like a slip and fall. Could be a dog bite.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to know, what do I do? When do I, how do I know if I've got a case, right?
Right.
Well, there are three things that we always look at in any personal injury action. There's liability, there's damages, and then there's the ability to collect those damages and causation. So we look to see if we can find some act which we can hold somebody liable for, which caused damages, and whether we can collect on those damages.
Right.
So, you know, there's a number of scenarios. You know, we mentioned earlier slip and falls. These happen all the time. Maybe it's a piece of pavement that's raised a few inches above grade that you trip over. It could be a pothole that you step in. And some of these injuries, Matt, are horrific.
Yeah, they can be terrible. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I would fall on the ground, you know, almost every day, and I'd feel like, yeah, you know, bounce back, no bruising, no soreness, no anything. But every year I get a little older, I get a little more scared of raised pavement and potholes and, you know, not much of a factor now, but in the winter with ice and things like that. And yeah, it's, the injuries can be a lot worse than you may think with just a simple trip and fall.
I've seen some pretty horrific things. I've seen people, shatter their ankles,
mm-hmm.
To the point where, you know, you need to have reconstructive surgery, which includes hardware.
Yep.
I've seen torn muscles in the thigh, basically.
Oof.
Yeah, that's.
I haven't come across that in my desk.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Broken arms, mm-hmm. Broken ribs. These are quite painful injuries. And when you're dealing, you know, really where you see the big money damages is when you have a broken bone, you have lost wages,
mm-hmm.
and you have surgery. Because surgery is always going to add an element of pain and suffering that, you know, doesn't, that really is where the courts kind of pick up and start paying. Just to give you, by way of an example, if you suffer a closed fracture of an ankle, okay, versus an open or a dislocated fracture, and you have to have surgery, that surgery of, say, a broken ankle, which requires hardware to be placed, could be worth $120,000.
Mm-hmm.
The same injury without surgery could be worth $20,000 to $40,000.
Right.
And that's without accounting for lost wages, of course. So, you know, obviously someone who makes $15 an hour, and misses 5 weeks of work, their damages are different than somebody who makes, $500,000 a year and misses 5 weeks of work.
Exactly.
So you got to take that into account as well. Looks like we got our first caller, Matt, which is always exciting. We got Howard from Albany. Good morning, Howard. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. I have a question for you.
Sure.
My daughter called me last week, and she lifted up a large ice pit at work and hurt her back. She didn't feel any pain till the next day. So I immediately told her to go back to work the next day because she said it was her fault. I said, well, it doesn't matter if it was your fault. You got to go back and fill out an accident report. What she did, she went to an orthopedic doctor. She was told not to go back to work for 2 weeks and go to physical therapy. It's a work-related incident, so, and it's a back injury. Unfortunately, she's a waitress and does not make a whole lot of money per hour. She depends on tips for compensation.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering if I'm following procedure there. I think I am, but I'm a little older, and I was always thought to, anytime you cut yourself, even a sliver at work, let them know, because you never know what's going to transpire.
You know, it's absolutely right, actually. It's funny you say that. You know, sometimes a cut can turn into something much worse. You know, an infection follows, and then you can have long-term disability from something simple. We had a gentleman not too long ago who struck his elbow while working, didn't think anything of it, and over the course of the next few months was dealing with a recurring infection that resulted, and it put him out of work for quite some time. So yeah, that can happen. And you know, when you're dealing with any type of workplace injury, that's what we call a workers' compensation claim. And what your daughter likely should do if she did miss work is to try to file a workers' compensation claim.
Okay.
Now she can work with an attorney. We work with a guy we use quite often called Steve Chesley at Sullivan Keenan and Cromwell, I think is the name. But Steve is an excellent attorney, great for workers' comp.
Do you think it's something where she should get a hold of an attorney or see if it heals? Or I mean,
she can file a claim on her own. In this case, if it heals on her own, it's not going to be a big case. It may be something that she can just take care of on herself. And I know you said she's a waitress and she's not making a lot per hour, but they're going to look at all of her income. And these days, you know, these days, income for waitressing and things like that is actually a lot easier to trace because there's more credit card transactions than cash.
Right.
Yeah, you end up claiming all your credit card tips at the end of a night.
Right.
And that shows up on your pay stub and pay history.
Used to be when I was in the restaurant business, you know, 10, 15 years ago as a young man, you know, the waiters would claim nothing.
Yeah, just a couple credit cards you have. Same here. I worked in restaurants about 17 years ago.
I owned a restaurant and everybody went to credit cards and debit cards, and it was a small operation. It was dollar coffees, and it, you know, it got a little ridiculous, to be quite honest with you. And that's part of it. I got out.
Well, listen, it's a double-edged sword, you know. And what happens is when you have people who work like that and they don't report their income, and then they do get injured. Okay, that's when it comes back to haunt them because they can't establish their income. My wife, who's also an attorney, did a big project down in Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, helping the fishermen, because the fishing industry down there was all cash, and they were all reporting that they were making about $25,000 a year.
Right.
And, you know, their lives were in shambles. They couldn't prove their income, and they actually worked out a deal with the government because it was such, you know, it was industry-wide. There were so many people affected. They worked out a deal, basically, where they could, you know, approximate the earnings even without the evidence. But that's not likely to happen in most cases. So remember that when, you know, you're out there, you're working for cash. That's where it comes back to haunt you.
Absolutely. So let the comp go and see how it goes. And if there's any issues,
the other good thing about
some of these young kids don't understand that, you know, it's not your fault if you lifted too much ice. You know, she was all worried about the employer. I said, Jacqueline, they have insurance. You're hurt, you know, and
fault is not likely to come. You know, and with workers' comp in particular, fault is not the key issue. In some cases it is. You know, for instance, if you've got a roofing crew, you provide all the right safety equipment, you teach them how to use it, and they just refuse to use it, you know, you can have what's called the recalcitrant workers' defense. So, you know, we gave them everything they needed to be safe. Had they used that equipment, they would have been safe, but they refused to use it on their own accord. You know, right. That's a defense in some instances, but you're really just looking at workers' comp is there to provide immediate financial and medical support to someone who's been injured in the workplace without even worrying about the fault issue. So that's okay. Sort of the idea there. And in exchange for paying that workers' comp insurance, the business owner gets their liability limited. So your right. sole recourse against the business is typically going to be workers' compensation insurance. There are some exceptions. You know, we as personal injury attorneys sometimes can work around workers' comp if the injury is severe enough. What happens is, you know, for example, let's say you have somebody injured in a factory and they are, let's say, exposed to some fire. Their uniform catches fire. They suffer burns. They're going to go against the employer for workers' compensation. But we're going to look at the uniforms themselves and see if they were up to snuff. Maybe look at a product liability case.
Right, right.
And so
right.
we'll sue a third party. If their injuries are grave enough, the third party can then sue the employer. But that's difficult. It doesn't happen a lot.
All right. Okay,
but it's
so
a good, it's
hard to keep doing what you're doing. And if there's pullback from the employer, then maybe you got to do something about it.
Right, exactly. Right, absolutely. Then you might need an attorney. It sounds like if she's just out for 2 weeks, she goes right back. You know, that's great. I think she should file the claim, get it started. She can get an attorney to come help her later if she wants, or she can start now and ask around. And it never hurts to call somebody who focuses their practice on workers' comp, like Steve Chesley, and
okay.
And talk to him.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Thank
great
you.
Great hearing from you. Thank you so much. So, you know, we're here in the studio taking calls, answering questions. It's one of my favorite things to do on a Saturday, actually. And if you have a question about a case and you want a quick answer, you want to discuss a topic, it could be something you saw on the news, it could be just a general question about the law. We're here to answer those questions, 476-1300. And we're not just here in the studio. We actually, as I was mentioning earlier, you know, Gervin and Ferlazzo has been around the Capital District for over 25 years. And the folks there, including Jay Gervin and Sal Ferlazzo and Christine Lanchanton, who founded the firm about 25 years ago, have built a tremendous practice with great people. We were out last night, you know, as a group after work. And I just really enjoy being around all the people that we work with. And I think that speaks so highly of our firm. That we have that kind of culture. You know, I often tell people there's not a single person in my office that I don't like or that I don't want to see on a daily basis. And I really think that means a lot.
It
says a lot
makes
about
it makes a good place to work. It makes makes the work a little more a little better when you can go to anybody in your office and ask a question and feel comfortable asking them that question. So yeah.
Yeah, and have a, you know, and have a good relationship outside of work as well. So I'm thankful for that. Anyway, the number here in the studio, 476-1300. We got Chad from Colony. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you, sir?
Good. I got two questions for you. One is, with all the, you know, distractions that are going on with driving now, I see a lot of people are putting the dash cams up.
Mm-hmm.
Legally speaking, are they binding in a court of law?
Well, when you say binding, do you mean are you able to contest what's shown on the footage?
Correct.
Sure, you can. I mean, first of all, that film only captures a certain perspective, right? So there are things that are going on off camera as well, generally, unless you've got some amazing 360-degree technology. So there's always going to be some doubt there. But, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And if you've got live footage, it's certainly going to come in. It's certainly going to be highly relevant. And if it depicts some sort of negligence, you know, that's something that you're going to have to work around. Is it the end-all, be-all in all cases? No. You know?
Okay.
So do you have a specific hypothetical situation that you're thinking of, Chad?
Well, no. I just see such blatant negligence on the road anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm actually seeing tractor-trailer drivers texting while they're driving.
Isn't that amazing?
That's
insane. I know.
The carnage that can come in those tractor-trailer accidents is unbelievable.
Right. There was one day where I was going up the Northway. I actually saw somebody reading a Kindle, you know, notepad on their steering wheel.
That's
you got to be kidding me.
That's unreal.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's one of the questions I had. And then the second question I had for you, with regards to, you know, the leash law in the state of New York.
Okay.
If somebody is renting out of a rental property, they have a dog, and they're not keeping control of the dog, and the dog obviously is an aggressive dog, and let's say somebody ends up getting bit, okay? My question is, not only is the dog owner responsible, but does that come into play as well with the landlord as well, because they are allowing the pet on the property?
It's a great question. Are you, as the landlord, harboring a dangerous animal? It would probably depend on your knowledge. So if you know that the animal is dangerous, it's possible that you could have some liability. But remember that the owner of the dog is going to have strict liability first. So the
Correct.
Best thing that you can do as a landlord is make sure that you're in your lease, you require your tenant to have a homeowner's or a renter's insurance policy. And you're going to want to ask for proof of that policy, and you're going to want to make sure that the liability limits are sufficient enough to cover a dog bite incident. So I would recommend a minimum of $500,000 in coverage, and I would make sure that you get proof of coverage every few months, because what happens sometimes is people will pay for it the first month to get that certificate and then stop paying for it. And you
Right.
want to be cautious of that. And you want to obviously also have your own liability policy. And then the other thing that you can do to further insulate yourself is to create an LLC and put the property in the LLC. So if you've got a house that's worth $150,000 and you're renting it out, and you put that into an LLC.
That's one other question I had for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hear stuff. I don't know how true it is. It's hearsay, but I hear that even people that go get LLCs supposedly, I guess there's a way around the system where they can even be sued yet. Isn't that correct, or is that incorrect?
Yeah, no, it is true. There's something called piercing the veil. And so what happens is people who don't treat their LLC or the property in their LLC like a company and like the property of a company, you can pierce that veil. So you have to, when you create an LLC, you have to do more than just create the LLC. You actually need to keep your finances separate. You need to treat the property like it's not your own, like it belongs to the company, and you need to take steps to make sure that you're following all the formalities under the law. Now, it's not an onerous task to do that. You just need to understand what those are. So, you know, you can create an LLC online for a few hundred dollars, or you can pay an attorney like us to do it for a little bit more than that, and we'll explain to you all of the ins and outs of what you need to do to make sure to prevent piercing of the corporate veil. Probably the biggest thing you need to do is keep the finances separate. You know, don't put rent from your business right into your personal checking account. Open up a business account.
Right.
Use the name of the LLC on your lease and in all interactions with your client. You know, you send an email, sign it as member of the LLC, not as yourself individually. Make sure, you know, what's really important is from the outset that the person you're dealing with knows and understands that they're dealing with a limited liability company, because then they can't later claim surprise, right?
Right.
So there's all sorts of things like that you need to do to make sure to keep the protections that are afforded to you through a limited liability company.
Hey, appreciate the call. Thanks.
Oh, no, thanks for calling,
Chad.
That was great. You know, what he was saying about the tractor trailer drivers is really frightening. We've had some cases where even just a second of distraction by one of these guys, you got to remember how much one of those trucks weighs. And, you know, he crosses the line and hits a car, and that can forever change somebody's life, right? And the other thing that, you know, he made me think of, which I think is important to share with folks, and I'll get to it in just 1 second. I just want to give everybody the number again. If you got a question, 476-1300. This is the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. We are here to take your questions and calls. And it doesn't have to be about what we're talking about now. We can break topic and talk about just about anything.
We'll take any topic, any calls. You know, me and Dan can ramble on about the law and everything.
You'd think we got paid by the word the way we keep rambling on. So, but what it made me reminded of is the importance of supplementary underinsured motorist coverage. And a lot of people don't know about this, and I can't stop literally preaching about it because I see so many people who get in an accident. And you know, that ride in a helicopter from the scene of an accident to a hospital is $50,000 today.
$50,000. I did not know that.
Do you know what the state minimum insurance is in New York?
What's that?
$25,000.
Hmm.
All right, so you can exceed all available coverage
in just one helicopter, right?
In nothing. All right, and that's not even, that's before you get to your pain and suffering. That's before you get to the emotional damages. That's before you get to lost wages. I mean, it is crazy the cost of one of these accidents and the havoc that it can wreak. And so there are people out there driving with minimum coverage of $25,000 in liability coverage, and that's all that they have. And you can. Basically, you're playing Russian roulette out there with these drivers, but it's very easy for you to protect yourself from these guys, okay? You can buy this SUM policy, alright? That's what it's known as, SUM, S-U-M, Supplementary Underinsured Motorist Coverage. And essentially, you can pay for excess insurance for anybody out there up to whatever limit you want to. So for example, what happens is, let's say you have on your personal liability a policy of $300,000. Okay, and you buy supplementary underinsured motorist coverage, okay? And somebody hits you who has a $25,000 policy, all right? You have catastrophic injuries, you've lost wages, you're in bad shape. You're going to take the entire $25,000 from the other driver, and your own insurance company is going to pay you an additional $275,000 all the way up to your liability limit. So basically, through this sum coverage, you can make sure that everybody on the road has enough insurance.
Yeah.
And it's very inexpensive. Literally, I think probably for what I have, I may pay an extra $250 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing compared to the...
Worth it for the peace of mind, if you have.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, we're going to go to news, and then when we come back, we're going to get to our callers. We have Linda and Liz on the line, and please hang on, and we'll be right back.
WGDJ, Rensselaer, Paul Vandenberg, Fred Dicker, and Michael Zabajevtinos, the Capital District's talk station, Talk 1300.
President Trump commissioning a $13 billion warship at Naval Station Norfolk in Virginia, the USS Ford, to be officially turned over to the Navy in a few minutes. The Washington Post reporting that U.S. intelligence intercepted communications from the former Russian ambassador detailing meetings with then-Senator Jeff Sessions, at which they discussed campaign policy issues. ABC's David Wright with more from Washington.
This new Post story comes as Attorney General Sessions is already under fire. Just this past week, the president told the New York Times he would have picked somebody else for the job of Attorney General had he known that Sessions was going to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. Now, his story that he never had any conversations with the Russians during the campaign is coming under scrutiny, and he's having to change his story. It's not looking good for him.
The president tweeting that the only crime so far has been the leaks. Federal grand jury in Hawaii indicting a U.S. soldier for attempting to provide material to support ISIS. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
There's a new approach to fighting crime in Albany. I'm Mike Carey in the Talk 1300 newsroom. State police will be hitting the streets of Albany beginning Thursday. Officials say state police will begin partnering with Albany patrols in an effort to reduce group-involved violence. The move comes as Albany officials say the number of shootings the first half of the year has more than doubled from the same period last year. The number of murders has tripled. Acting Police Chief Robert Sears and Mayor Kathy Sheehan held a news conference earlier this month to admit there's been an uptick in violent crime. Sears claimed the randomness of the incidents and the fact they seemed to be personal disputes was making it difficult for his department to get a handle on how to best address the problem. A Milton man is headed to prison in connection with a fatal accident. 23-year-old Craig Dufour received 1 1/3 to 4 years yesterday in Saratoga County Court. In May, Dufour pled guilty to leaving the scene of an accident without reporting. Prosecutors say he was driving on Saratoga Avenue in Milton last October when he hit a pedestrian who was standing in the road. They add he drove off and tried to hide the vehicle. The pedestrian died. Four others were also charged in connection with the incident. Three passengers were charged with making false statements. Their cases are pending. The fourth is charged with tampering with evidence for allegedly helping Dufour try to hide the vehicle. Her case is also pending. The leader of a New York to Albany drug ring is headed to prison. John Ramos of Brooklyn received 15 years in prison. He was one of 27 people indicted by State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Schneiderman says Ramos was the leader of the ring that trafficked hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cocaine, heroin, and prescription drugs from New York City to the Capital Region. Schneiderman says the investigation led to the seizure of $500,000 worth of heroin and $50,000 worth of cocaine. 24 of the 27 other suspects previously pled guilty. The remaining two defendants are still being sought. Warrants are out for their arrests. An investigation into sexual abuse allegations has led to the arrest of a Milton man. Saratoga County Sheriff's deputies say 30-year-old Oscar Catalan had unwanted physical and sexual contact with four females between January and July of this year. They say all of the victims were known to Catalan. He's charged with sexual abuse and endangering the welfare of a child. He was arraigned in Milton Town Court and sent to the Saratoga County Jail. Almost 33,000 turned out yesterday for opening day at Saratoga Racecourse. The attendance of 32,700 was about 150 less than opening day last year, but officials say all sources handle saw a 14.5% increase from last year. Weather forecast from Spectrum News meteorologist Heather Morrison. Increasing clouds with a chance of showers late this afternoon, high in the low 80s. Showers and thunderstorms likely tonight, low in the low 60s. I'm Mike Carey. You're up to date where you can wake up with Paul Vandenberg weekday mornings at 5:30 here on Talk 1300.
Now, the most live local talk with the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show.
Good morning, Capital District, and welcome back to the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. I'm your host, Daniel Rubin. I'm here in the studio with my friend and colleague, Matt Tullio. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Dan.
Welcome back here for the second exciting, action-packed half hour of our call-in legal show. We are here to answer your questions about the law. Matt and I have experience in a variety of areas, and we work at a firm, Gervin and Ferlazzo, who's been practicing and serving folks here in the Capital District for over 25 years. Real estate, labor and employment, municipal law, civil and commercial litigation. Yeah.
Pretty much everything but criminal law and matrimonial law.
Yeah. So if you have a question, we'd be happy to answer it for you. 476-1300. Give us a call. We don't bite. Well, I don't bite. Matt may bite.
Maybe right before lunch.
Well, speaking of callers, we have Liz who's been waiting patiently on the line through the break. Good morning, Liz. Thank you so much for waiting. How can we help?
Good morning, and thank you very much.
Sure.
I own a home in downtown Albany, one of those row houses, and it was close to the fires on Madison Avenue. I'm sure you are aware of that, right?
Yes, horrific situation, yes.
Okay, so I had a thought. Just say that there was a tenant in one of those buildings, or any building, that did something that was illegal. Let's say they had a fire in it, which I believe is not allowed in downtown Albany. And as a result of that, the house caught fire and burned several houses on the block.
Yes.
Now, okay, here's my question. As, let's say, one of those houses turns out to be mine, can I, one, sue the person who started the fire? Two, do I also have recourse with the owner of the property? So those are my questions.
Okay. All right, Liz. That's great. So yeah, a lot going on there. So let's talk just generally first. Did you have more you wanted to add?
Why hang up and listen?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, you know, it's a great question. All right. You got a lot of mix of factors here. You got row houses, which are tightly packed together. Mm-hmm. So you got to understand the duties between one person to the next. You've got landlord-tenant situations. So you have somebody living in the house who's not the owner. And what is their responsibility? And, you know, what is their responsibility to their neighbors? So first, let's just talk generally about what every landlord should do. And we got into it a little bit earlier with another caller, but basically, as the landlord who doesn't occupy the premises, you're going to have a structural policy, or you should. If you don't, you need to get one, and you need to get it right now. You should stop listening to the show and call your insurance agent. I'm not kidding. That's going to cover a fire on your own policy. And what happens is, let's say in the scenario that Liz gave us, or what actually just occurred, where you have a fire that starts in one house and then it spreads to another, is your insurance company is going to, or should, pay for your damages, and they're going to have what's called a right of subrogation. And they're basically going to take any rights that you have to sue somebody else, and they're going to use that to try to collect from the other owners or the person who started the fire or the or their insurance companies for the damages that they sustained, i.e. what they had to pay out to you. So sort of what happens is you go to your own insurance company first. You collect from them. Once you've collected from them, they have the right to go and sue everybody else and try to collect for their damages, and you have a responsibility to cooperate with them when they do that. The next thing that you should do as a landlord is always require your tenant to have a renter's insurance policy. And that's going to do two things. Number one, it's going to give some protection and comfort to the renter who's going to have coverage for the personal property that they lose in the fire, all right? Because if you think about it, if you had to today go back out and buy every single piece of clothing, every single item in your kitchen, all of the things that you use for, let's say, your business or even your leisure, your television, your computer, all of these things at once, it would be a tremendous expense. And it's not one that the average person can actually bear. And recovering from a fire like that is a serious issue. So you as a renter benefit from having this policy, which will give you, depending on the coverages you purchase, a certain amount of money that they'll pay you for your lost belongings, which you can use to rebuild your life. At the same time, you also get liability coverage, and that's going to be important for a number of reasons. In the scenario that you've listed, if somebody did an intentional act like arson, your insurance policy isn't going to cover that. Okay, you're going to have other problems, but you as the landlord are going to look to your own insurance company because you didn't start the fire, so it wasn't caused by you. But those kind of situations, insurance doesn't cover intentional acts. You know, in a typical liability policy, even an umbrella policy, isn't going to cover me if I come across the table here and punch Matt in the nose and he sues me, okay? But for all other things, which are, and typically this is the most likely situation, you're going to have an accident. Somebody, either a product is going to malfunction or somebody's going to do something careless and cause a fire. That renter's insurance policy will have a liability limit, okay? You, as the purchaser, set the liability that you want. So you can purchase it in different increments. The more liability coverage you buy, the more expensive it is. So if you go out and buy a renter's policy with $300,000 in coverage, if I recall from my law school days when I had a renter's insurance policy, I paid about $120 a year to have $15,000 in coverage for my personal belongings in the event of a fire or structural loss, and $300,000 in liability, which would have covered me if Matt came over to my house and he slipped on the careless pile of laundry that I left in the doorway for 3 months as a law student. Obviously, that all changed when my beautiful wife came into the picture. I had to clean my act up. But that's good because it's going to insulate the landlord, okay? The first place we're going to look to is the renter's insurance policy, which covers the negligent acts of the tenant. So that can also happen in the fire situation where you cause a fire. There's now a pool of money, depending on what the liability limits are, to cover the losses. So what you want to do as a landlord is make sure that in your lease, you require as a condition of the lease that the tenant have a renter's insurance policy. Okay? And so you also want in that lease to specify the amount of liability coverage that they have to have. I would recommend an absolute minimum of $500,000, and it's not going to be very expensive. And then the other thing that I would point out to people, and you need to remember this, is that you're going to want to make sure that they show you proof that they purchased it, okay? And here's the trick. Here's what people will do, and so you've got to be a little bit vigilant here. People will pay the first month of the policy, get a certificate saying that they have it, and then they'll stop paying. So I would recommend that you continually ask them for proof of coverage. Okay, that's really the key there. So that, I hope, answers your question, Liz. We got another caller. Before we go to Pete in Niskayuna, I want to just give the folks the number, 476-1300. If you've got a question and you'd like some information or you want to talk about the law generally, we're happy to do so. Give us a call, 476-1300. Pete from Niskayuna, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Very great. Well, it's a little gray here.
Okay.
Potty here, but I'll take it. beat the rain, right?
At least it's not humid and hot.
Yeah, exactly. I have a question for you.
Sure.
Rent versus a lease.
Say that again. Rent versus lease?
A lease. I know of a house. No, it's a very, very nice house. But I talked to the gentleman. The owner moved on, but rather than renting it, he's leasing it.
So he's subleasing it.
3-year lease. It's like a 3-year lease. And they're great people. I'm not complaining, but I don't know from, I don't know if real estate is your expertise, but how do you do it? Can you explain it to me from a legal standpoint? Am I making any sense?
Okay. I think, Pete, what you're asking is you rented a house to someone, right? And then they rented it to somebody else. Is that the case?
No. I own my own home.
Okay.
A person in the neighborhood left, couldn't sell their house, bought another house, but the people living there that are renting it, he's doing a 3-year lease.
Okay.
What's the difference?
There's really no difference between renting and leasing. It's just a term of art, really. You know, lease implies a little bit longer term than rent. You could rent something for a day.
Right. You rent a car for a couple of days. You lease an apartment for a year.
Yeah, it's not much of a difference in the context that you're using it.
So basically, a lease can be... Well,
a lease is also an instrument. A lease can also refer to an instrument. So, you know, like a contract that would be between the renter and the owner. And that is a very important document that's going to spell out all the rights of both parties and, again, all the responsibilities, which goes right back to what Liz was asking about, which is, you know, how do I insulate myself? How do I make sure that there's enough coverage around in the event of a catastrophe? That's all stuff you can spell out in the lease.
Okay. Now I understand. So basically, if you're an owner of a property, you're better off doing a lease agreement where you can have a contract and write certain requirements.
Absolutely.
Into that contract.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, the funny thing is, Pete, if you rent to somebody without a lease, there's still actually a lease. You know, it's just a default lease that's spelled out in the rent and tenant law. And basically it means that you've elected to allow the state of New York and its wonderful legislature to decide what the terms of your agreement are going to be rather than doing what's better for you and spelling out exactly what you want and what you expect. So don't think that just by renting that, you know, you're not creating a landlord-tenant relationship. You are. In fact, if you allow a guest, even a relative, to come and move into your house, you've created a landlord-tenant relationship. And they're going to have rights. You're going to have to evict them if they refuse to leave, if you can believe that. So you definitely always want a lease. And if you're going to allow someone to come stay temporarily, you should spell that out too. You know, it's important because situations like this arise. I've had to deal with, someone, a boyfriend-girlfriend situation. The boyfriend owns a house or the girlfriend owns the house. They let their significant other move in. They have no agreement in place. They end up breaking up, and one doesn't want to leave. And guess what? They've got to be evicted. They've got rights in that property. So it's important to have a lease, just like you say. Thanks, Pete, for your call. We're going to be here in the studio for a little bit longer. We got a few more minutes to take your calls. If you have a question about the law and you'd like to discuss it with us here, 476-1300 is the number. And I've been trying to get it out all show here, okay? But if you have a question that you don't want to ask on the radio, maybe you're shy like Matt is. Oh, come on, Matt. I mean, I gotta give you an opening.
I'm letting you, you're rolling. You're on fire this morning. I'm just sitting back and watching, the magic happen.
He's letting me do all the work, folks. So, 476-1300 is the number here in the studio. But if you want to call us during the week, you can always get us at 462-0300. And if you got a question about litigation, if you got a question about personal injury, which is my particular focus, or medical malpractice, happy to take those calls and discuss things with you there. 462-0300 is the number. You can also email me if you have a question. I'm happy to get back to you, and we're very responsive generally as a firm. My email is D, S as in Sam, R as in Ruben, at gervinlaw.com. Matt, how about your email for the folks?
Yeah, feel free to email me. I work with Dan, personal injury litigation, a lot of debt collection, things like that. So I try to be pretty responsive on my emails, you know, less than 24 hours. You can email me. It's M as in Matt, L as in Lawrence, T as in tomato, at gervinlaw.com.
I'm going to start calling you Mater around the office.
Yeah,
now.
There you go. It's like
right out of the Cars movie. He's always my favorite character in that show.
Larry the Cable Guy. He's a underrated acting talent.
Oh, he's a phenom. He's a phenom, I would have to
really
say.
Really surprised that guy hasn't landed an Oscar nom yet, you know?
Well, your jokes have landed us another caller.
All right.
I'm pretty excited about this. We have Judy from Troy. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Welcome to the program.
Good morning. More of a comment, because I've recently had to buy renter's insurance.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Someone, and in a pricier city, it was $300. Because it's probably gone up since.
Yes.
Although it is a more expensive city and probably pretty good coverage. $300, but it was also paid in one lump sum.
Well, that's good. That's what you want.
Which, you know, like, I don't know if an insurance company even wants you paying $20 a month for 12 months and figure you just want to do it.
What can happen is you can bundle it with your car insurance.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then they'll let you pay it monthly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this was just all by itself. Well, actually, no, it wasn't really all by itself.
So what kind of coverage limits did you get for $300?
You know, I'm trying to remember. Whatever the apart, this was an apartment management company that required it. So whatever they asked for, that's what we got.
You know, if you're, you know, that brings up an interesting point, Judy. If you're a landlord and you're out there trying to figure out best practices, you should look around at some of these big companies and go in and say like you want to rent and learn what they do, because that'll give you some insight into what you should be doing.
Uh-huh. Yep, yep. You know, they've done it. They know what to do, and they know that they should have insurance.
It's very important.
Because there's just something that's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and especially in those bigger complexes, you know, for them to have insurance, their insurance company is going to require that they make the tenants have insurance. You know, so it's probably a requirement of their own insurance contract. So they're going to be vigilant about that kind of thing.
But I think maybe if you're a landlord, you just say you got to pay the whole thing in one lump sum.
Sure, you absolutely can do
Although,
that.
Yeah, coming up with $300 is tough for people, especially when you're just moving.
So. Well, you're just moving. You got to pay that deposit. You got to pay the first month, the last month.
It's another couple hundred dollars to.
What's $300 more?
Yeah, for peace of mind. You know?
Well, I can tell you, $300 is a lot less than $500,000 if you should burn down
that's
your neighborhood.
True.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Judy, for the update on that.
Yeah, thank you.
I haven't had to purchase renter's insurance.
Yeah, you're on homeowners now, so.
That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah,
that's another kettle of fish, boy. But same principles, right? So I have a structural policy, and I also have a liability policy, and then I tie my homeowners and car insurance together into an umbrella policy, which is another policy that people, if you don't know about it, you absolutely should get. And so what it does is it's an excess coverage, and it's going to cover you for any negligent act, okay, no matter where you are. So that's important, right? Because your homeowner's insurance covers you while you're at home mostly. There's sometimes they'll pay a certain amount or a percentage of the total liability policy for things that you do off of your property, but it's very limited. Your car insurance covers you while you're driving.
Uh-huh.
But what about when you're just out and about? And, you know, as Matt was explaining earlier, he was a clumsy kid. You know, what if Mater, if Matt Lawrence Mater was out and he suddenly was walking down the street and he is not paying attention. He's on his cell phone. He's eating a hot dog, drinking Starbucks.
Birds,
smoking a cigarette all at the same time. And he should push a little old lady into the street, and she falls down and breaks her hip. You know, what happens then? So that's where an umbrella policy is going to be very helpful, because it's going to cover you for negligent acts that happen anywhere. Now, as we said earlier, it's not going to cover an intentional act. So don't think you can go out and buy yourself an umbrella policy.
Start pushing old ladies down and stealing their purses. And
start
stealing their butterscotch candies. And
the Worthingtons, is that
the
Worthingtons,
one? Yep.
So what I did is I had my policies, and you would think I'm selling insurance here, but really what it is that I'm a personal injury attorney. And so I'm always dealing with situations where people are hurt and injured, and we're looking for somebody to shift that risk to. We're looking for an insurance company. So it sounds like I'm an insurance salesman, but really I'm just looking out for my clients.
Maybe in a past life.
And everybody else out there. Or in the future.
Yeah, that's true.
But so what you do is you, in order to get a umbrella policy, which is also very inexpensive, I think for $2 million in liability coverage that I pay a few hundred dollars a year, mm-hmm. I bundle it with my auto. I have to have minimum, liability limits on my auto policy in order to get the umbrella. So I have to have a minimum, I think, in my current situation of $250,000 per person, $500,000 per accident, in order to even get the umbrella policy. But you do that. You bundle them all together. You get all kinds of savings for bundling. And it really gives you a lot of peace of mind while you're out there in the world. So it's a scary, dangerous place with people like Mater walking around. If you got a question you want to talk about, liability, personal injury, or any other area of the law, give us a call here in the studio, 476-1300. This is the Gervin and Ferlazzo Law Show. Gervin and Ferlazzo, 25 years serving the Capital District.
25 years.
You know, and I was talking a little bit earlier about the great people that we work with. Yeah. You know, some of them, Sal Ferlazzo, obviously, he's been my mentor at the firm, and a great guy to work for. I always marvel at the fact that we get clients sometimes because people have been sued by Sal,
mm-hmm.
and they were so impressed by his representation that they hired him on their side this time.
Yeah.
You know, that says a lot. And you know, the other thing that I love about Sal and what's a great thing to have in a mentor is people universally like and respect Sal,
mm-hmm.
and his name carries some good weight around the community. And you know, you go out, even people that we've been against think highly of Sal, and I think that's the way as attorneys that we like to conduct ourselves, because at the end of the day, you know, you can have that image in your mind of the rabid pit bull attorney who doesn't take crap from anybody, and you know, he's out there arguing and stirring up a mix, and that's not really what you want. What you want is a person who can keep a cool head in a situation, evaluate all the different options, look at the risk, explain the risk to you, and then go out to another trained professional like himself who has respect for him and work out the best possible result. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what it's about at the end of the day, is getting to the best possible result. And if your reputation in the community is that you can't be trusted, or that you're a sly guy who's always trying to put one over on somebody else, you know, it's not going to work.
Right.
Especially not in Albany, or as is colloquially Smallbany. Known, Smallbany.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't take long to get to know all the players in this community, and it's important to treat everybody with respect. And, you know, that's what we do. That's how Sal's done things. I mean, the other people in our firm, Chris Lanchanton, wonderful relationships, wonderful reputation in the community. You've been working a lot more with Pat Fitzgerald and Chris Langlois
mm-hmm.
these days,
yep.
right?
Who both have sterling reputations in the the area.
Yeah, I mean Pat in labor and employment and commercial transaction law. He's been doing some big stuff
mm-hmm.
in that area. They've just finished wrapping up a multinational sale of a big corporation. That took a lot of Pat's time, but here from Albany, you know, it's amazing what we can do. We're working with companies that are overseas presence.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Langlois is one of the smartest people that I've ever met. And, you know, what's great about Christopher is you go in to talk through an issue, and the guy, you know, it sounds kind of trite, but he starts at the beginning and ends at the end. By the time Christopher gets to the end of his argument, you are convinced that there is no other possible way to look at a situation. And he writes just as eloquently, which, you know, I find, people usually have one or the other. They write well or they speak well. But I don't, you know, a lot of people don't do both.
Yeah, it's rare to get that combination of well writer, good writer, and
yeah,
well spoken.
And a great oratorio. What am I? Am I making up words here now?
Is that orator?
Orator. Orator. Thank you very much. See, obviously I am not an orator. Number here in the studio, 476-1300. We got about 2 or 3 minutes left. If you didn't get a chance to call in today, but you want to talk to us, or you have a question about the law, or you're just not sure what to do, and you got a situation that you think might require a lawyer, give us a call at the office. 462-0300, 518-462-0300. You can email me at D as in Daniel, S as in Sydney, R as in Ruben, at GervinLaw.com. Matt, how about your email?
M as in Matthew, L as in Lawrence, and T as in
Tomato.
At GervinLaw.com.
And you know, check out our website too. We've been putting up a lot of new content on the website. You know, chances are if you've got a question, there might be some information right there for you. That's www. www.gervinlaw.com. You can listen to past episodes of the radio show up there.
Maybe one of your questions was answered a couple weeks ago. And right. You can see it on the website.
You can send us a quick request for a consultation. Throw your question in there. We're happy to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but generally speaking, we had a good discussion today about the importance of various different insurance that people can purchase and why they should purchase it.
The importance of insurance.
And one of the things people don't know, and you're dealing with this now in your collections practice, is that a judgment in New York is good for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you may get into a situation now, you think, you know, I'm young, I don't really have anything, who's going to sue me, what are they going to get?
Yeah.
And the reality is, they might sue you, they might get a lot. You may not be able to pay it now.
Yeah.
But you're gonna
be able to in 10 years.
You're gonna have a guy like Matt hounding you down, trying to seize your bank accounts, garnish your wages. Those are some of the tools that you have,
right? Yeah, absolutely. Put a lien on any property you own, whether it's a personal property like a car, real property. If you buy a home one day, then all of a sudden.
The creditors come
out of the woodwork. Yeah. 20 years is a long time. You don't think about it when you're young, but.
And you don't. You know. And you know, for a couple of $100, you get yourself a renter's insurance policy, an umbrella policy, you can have a lot of peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's only, you know, it can happen to anybody in just a second. And it goes right back to that truck driver scenario. You got a guy, he's checking a text, and the next thing you know, he's ruined someone's entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it. I've seen it. I've dealt with it. I've tried to pick up the pieces afterwards. And you know what? You know what? That state minimum insurance isn't going to cut it. Listen, folks, it's been great talking with everyone. We're happy to have your calls, and we look forward to seeing you right back here next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Talk 1300.
WGDJ, Rensselaer, Paul Vandenberg, Frank Vicker, and
Michael thought to be undocumented immigrants stuffed into a trailer.